If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Las Vegas. It's so much more than just a city.
It's a feeling. It's that feeling of excitement when you spot the lights of the strip out the airplane window.
It's that feeling of awe as you stroll down the boulevard, taking in the sights and sounds.
And it's that feeling of satisfaction, knowing that you're in the greatest city in the world.
Tens of millions of people share that feeling every year.
And I'm just one of them. Here to take you to the world-famous Vegas Strip
and beyond.
My name is Jeff, and this is Jeff Does Vegas. Welcome to episode number 179 of Jeff Does Vegas. Before we get into it for this episode of the podcast, I want to take a moment to thank my guest from the last episode, Dr. Michael Bryan, aka the Travel Psychologist. Michael and I went in depth on the changes in people's behavior when they travel, the types of personalities they tend to adopt, whether or not it's healthy for people to blow off steam on vacation, and much more. If you haven't listened yet, jump into the archives at jeffdoesvegas.com or search out Wandering Minds, The Psychology of Travel. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Many consider it to be the ultimate Las Vegas movie, a film that not only redefined comedy, but helped to put Las Vegas back on the map as the ultimate playground for adventure and misadventure. Of course, I'm talking about The Hangover. And 2024 marks a major milestone as the film celebrates its 15th anniversary. It was all the way back on June 5th, 2009, when the world was introduced to Doug, Alan, Phil, and Stu, aka the Wolfpack. And we were all brought along for the ride as the boys tried to retrace their steps and solve several mysteries from the previous night's shenanigans. Joining me for this episode of the show is David Rosen, the host of Piecing It Together, a movie podcast with a twist. David and I went in-depth on The Hangover as we discussed the first time we ever saw the movie, how it helped to launch the careers of people like Bradley Cooper, Zach Galifianakis, and Ken Jeong, the cultural impact of the film and how it's remained relevant for as long as it has, the impact it's had on Vegas tourism, and much, much more. Please enjoy my conversation with David Rosen from Piecing It Together.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much for having this idea, because doing all of this Hangover coverage was not something like I was really planning on, but at the same time, revisiting this movie was so much fun, and so I am glad to be talking about it.
So for anybody that has been living under a rock for the last 15 years, let's talk a little bit about the movie The Hangover to start off. Of course, the plot, it's a crazy night in Vegas. It's a bunch of guys going for a bachelor party. They're just there to party. Things go awry. They have this night, I would say night to remember, but they can't remember any of it.
Sure. There you go. Yeah. That's a way to describe it. Yeah.
And of course, some big stars in this movie, Bradley Cooper, Ed Helms, Zach Galifianakis, and Justin Bartha, who, although he is a star in the movie, he's kind of the guy that sort of gets forgotten about, well, literally, in the plot of the movie, but just sort of in general as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. When the second one came along, I remember thinking like, you know, who is this guy again? Like I just did not really remember. But I do think we should say, I mean, we're going to talk more about all of these people throughout this conversation. But calling them big stars at the time, you know, Bradley Cooper, Ed Helms, Zach Galifianakis were at different levels than what we think of them now. And Cooper was still in a kind of transitional period. I mean, he had some, you know, relatively big stuff under his belt, but he wasn't the powerhouse that he is now. Ed Helms was still coming off of The Office. Zach Galifianakis was really just a comedian. So they really broke out with this movie.
Same deal with Todd Phillips, director on this movie as well. I mean, this was sort of his, he'd had some big movies previous, sort of in the same genre and ilk as The Hangover. But this was kind of the movie that really did launch his career in a big way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was such a big fan of Road Trip and Old School, like especially Road Trip. I feel like most people would say especially Old School, but I always loved Road Trip. You know, I love Tom Green, so, you know, of course. But this was like a big, big, like turning point for him into being just this huge name in comedy filmmaking. And then, you know, where he ends up after that point.
Let's talk about our first Hangover experiences, because I think it's one of those movies that, again, it's sort of the, you remember where you were the first time you saw it. I know for me, talked a little bit about this in the watch along episode that we put together. My first time seeing The Hangover was radio station premiere, the radio station I was working for in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. We used to do a ton of movie premieres in the big Famous Players Theater right in West Edmonton Mall, which, by the way, is if you're into kind of going to see interesting kind of movie theaters, this was a really cool movie theater concept. They had, of course, the big arcade and they had restaurants, but they had a fire breathing dragon at the time, which was right at the entrance. We hosted this big premiere for The Hangover, and I remember giving away passes to it on the air. And it was sort of almost like a, I don't want to say a throwaway, but I mean, the trailer, it was one of those things where it looked funny and everybody kind of said, well, I bet you it's one of those movies where they just sort of, they put all the funny parts in the trailer and sure, that'll be that. But it really wasn't. I mean, we went in there and yeah, the funny parts that were in the trailer were in there, but there was so much more to it. And I just remember the theater laughing nonstop top to bottom. And it was so rare that we had a premiere like that. Radio stations quite often get premieres of movies that don't necessarily make the grade, so to speak, because sure, the movies that are really good movies, they don't need a radio station hyping them up. Yeah, and The Hangover was kind of like this surprise sleeper hit for us.
Yeah. I think my first experience was also like, it was like a press screening / radio screening, you know, one of those ones where they combine them so the theater is completely packed. And yeah, I remember it was just, everything was bringing the house down. And I remember at the time, because this is a few years after Borat, which Todd Phillips was one of the writers on, that was maybe the biggest audience reaction I think to this day I've ever seen in a theater. And this was kind of like that. It was just nonstop, just people losing their minds laughing. And it was super fun. And like you said, like I kind of went in expecting it to be where most of the funny moments were in the trailer, but yeah, it absolutely lived up and then some. And also, you know, seeing it in Vegas, because that's where I was at the time. I was already living here. And I think it was at the Palms, I'm pretty sure, the Brendan Palms, which is a great theater. And yeah, so we certainly had a lot of fun with it as a Vegas movie, too.
It's funny that you mentioned that whole idea of seeing a movie like Borat in a group like that as well, where it's just the nonstop, top to bottom sort of laughing. The only other experience I think I ever had with a radio station premiere like that or a press screening like that was other than The Hangover was Step Brothers. That was kind of the same idea. And again, sort of in that same ilk of dumb comedy kind of stuff. And that was another one where the trailer had a lot of funny stuff in it, but there was just so much more to the movie than what was in the trailer. And again, another one where you're sitting in a crowd of people and you were just laughing your ass off nonstop for the entire thing.
Absolutely. And the 2000s were a really great time for funny, like just totally balls to the wall comedies. And Step Brothers right in there, Borat. This being 2009, it's kind of like transitioning into a little bit different for what we've had in like the 2010s. I feel like things got maybe a little bit more heartfelt. You know, the Apatow thing was continuing to grow. And I think that, you know, attitudes change a little bit as we continue on. But this is like squarely in that early 2000s kind of vein of just anything goes comedy.
Was there anything that really kind of stuck out for you the first time you saw The Hangover? I mean, obviously you mentioned the whole living in Vegas and getting to see Vegas on the big screen and presented in sort of a different kind of way. But was there anything else in the movie that really kind of stuck out for you the first time you saw it?
I think for everybody, it would be Zach Galifianakis. I mean, he is the standout of everything, and everyone in this is great. And a lot of the, smaller cameo performances we'll talk about are also great. And the jokes are funny and seeing Vegas is great. But I feel like Zach Galifianakis, that's the biggest standout here.
For me, I think it was some of the Ken Jeong stuff, because he just played such a good character in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I mean, some of the stuff when he's jumping out of the trunk of the car and he's buck naked and he's on top of Bradley Cooper and beating them with the tire iron and stuff like that. I just remember in the theater that because it was so unexpected.
Yeah.
It just all of the sudden, you know, there's the scene, the plot, they're opening the trunk. They think it's their buddy. You know, it's not going to be their buddy because of the experience that they've already had in the movie so far.
Sure, yeah.
But when a tiny little Asian guy jumps out naked just starts beating someone, the place went nuts. And I mean, again, that was the standout stuff for me. And I think a lot of the people in the audience as well.
Yeah, he's so funny. And, you know, he can be hit or miss. I know a lot of people find him to be quite grating. Last year, there was a movie called Fool's Paradise, Charlie Day's directorial debut, which I am a huge champion of. I love that movie so much. He is just fearless in that movie. He's the most pathetic character you'll ever see in any movie. And I think it's hilarious. And yeah, when he hits, he is so good.
I saw a stand-up special from him a couple of years ago. I think it ran on Netflix, and it was very funny. Like, he's actually a really solid stand-up. And I mean, that was where he had a lot of his early work anyways, was in stand-up, in addition to being a legit medical doctor. Right. But stand-up was kind of where he was sort of, again, in that same world as Zach Galifianakis, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that story that you told during the watch along about his wife and how he just wanted to make his wife laugh, basically, in doing this role.
Yeah, she was going through breast cancer treatment and was really kind of having some health issues. And he was going back and forth between where they were in Vegas to, I think, between LA and Vegas, where she was getting treatment and where they were shooting the movie. And he said he really just kind of took the role to make her laugh, and the nudity stuff that he did was all him. That was his, that was not in the script. That was his idea before he jumped, you know, balls in the face on Bradley Cooper. Obviously, he cleared it with Bradley Cooper. But I mean, that was really, that was his thing. That was all him. He wanted to do that. And for him to be, again, that fearless and that sort of just out there was absolutely incredible.
Amazing. Amazing.
you touched on the sort of that time in movies and what was going on. Summer of 2009 was a pretty decent summer for movies, if I'm not mistaken. There were a few other blockbusters that were that in that sort of time period along with The Hangover.
Yeah, I jotted down a few of them. I mean, I didn't write anything down that was kind of outside of the realm of comedy because I wanted to kind of like just kind of rein it into that. But I mean, we did, speaking of Apatow, we had Funny People that summer, which depending on who you ask is great. But we also, speaking of Borat, we had Bruno, the follow-up to Borat with the Bruno character. There was also a Coen Brothers movie, A Serious Man, which is hilarious and really, really good. There's The Goods with Jeremy Piven's, which is in this vein, but not maybe as good. But
that is one of my favorite movies of all time. Like, that was a movie, speaking of sleeper hits, that, well, maybe not sleeper hit, cult classic, I guess, more than anything.
Sure.
I remember the first time I saw that movie, and I watched it based on a trailer, a couple of trailers that I saw, and I'm pretty sure I actually illegally downloaded that movie off the Pirate Bay or something like that. And I watched it a million times because it was so funny and had, again, sort of fit in this same sort of vein of comedy as The Hangover. Maybe not quite as polished, but definitely still sort of in that same vein.
Absolutely. Yeah. I haven't seen it since the theater. I would love to revisit that one of these days, especially since you're saying how funny it was, because I remember liking it, but I haven't seen it since back then. So I got to rewatch that. And then we also had a few like kind of cult classic comedies. We had Jennifer's Body, which has really like grown in reputation since then. And also Mystery Team, which I feel like people have been kind of rediscovering nowadays. But yeah, I mean, it was a strong summer for sure.
I know in kind of looking at some of the movies that were that summer, like the big blockbusters, that was a Transformers movie that summer. Rise of the Machines was that summer. Mm-hmm. Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince was that summer. Okay. X-Men Origins Wolverine was that summer. So it's crazy too when you think about that being there. And we're looking now at summer of 2024, and we've got a Wolverine movie with Deadpool. We still got Hugh Jackman. This is 15 years later now, and Hugh Jackman is still playing that Wolverine character. Mm. So that was some pretty big blockbusters that summer as well. And The Hangover really, it held its own box office wise too. I mean, it made a lot of money.
Yeah, it made a lot of money, $469 million off of a $35 million budget. Doesn't happen very often for comedies anymore. You know, people have kind of just moved on to expecting comedies to be something they watch on streaming, which I personally, I think sucks. Although we have had, you know, a few, you know, relatively big hits. We had, what was it called last year? No Hard Feelings with Jennifer Lawrence. That did quite well. What was the one? I'm drawing a blank on the name of it. It was going to be called Joy Fuck Club, but they changed the name of it at last minute. It was a funny movie, though.
Probably some good marketing planning right there. Yeah. It's right there.
That name stuck with me. The real name I couldn't think of. But, you know. But anyway, yeah. I mean, so there's a couple, but most comedies do not make money like this anymore.
Well, and The Hangover, too. I mean, 10th highest grossing film in 2009, as you mentioned, only had a budget of $35 million. And I know in talking to other movie nerds that I've talked to, they've always kind of said that in order for a movie to break even, they usually have to at least do twice the budget by the time you figure all the marketing costs and everything that goes with it. So this did that in a huge way. And then the other fun thing too with this movie was The Hangover was the highest grossing R-rated comedy ever in the U.S. It beat out Beverly Hills Cop, which had held that title for a very long time.
Yeah, that's amazing. That is a long time. What is that, like 84 maybe or something like that? Like, that is a long, long time. By the way, Joy Ride is what they changed it to. That was the name of the movie I was trying to think of.
Much more marketable.
Yes, absolutely.
It's funny going full circle too with the Beverly Hills Cop. I mean, think about the fact that Hangover, 15th anniversary this year, highest grossing R-rated comedy ever. We've got a new Beverly Hills Cop movie coming out here on Netflix very soon. So really, again, it's kind of that whole circle. And for a movie, for an R-rated movie to make that kind of money, that's a huge deal too, right? I mean, when you're limiting your audience by getting rid of anybody under the age of 18, that's a huge deal for a movie like that to pull those numbers.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's something that, you know, Hollywood, they never quite know what to do with these R-rated movies. Like, they don't know how to market them in a way, because they know that their audience, a lot of them are going to be actually under 18, but they just can't see it officially, you know? And so it definitely complicates things.
Let's talk a little bit about the career impacts on some of these people. We touched on it a little bit earlier, but we'll go a little bit deeper into it. I mean, again, some of these actors pre-Hangover were just, a couple of them were just sort of right on the cusp. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of them were really just sort of not in, living in ambiguity or obscurity, but really didn't have the big breakout. I mean, we mentioned Bradley Cooper prior to The Hangover. What was he doing? There wasn't a whole ton of like big stuff that he was in.
Not much, but I will say that I was a fan of his for a long, long time. And I was so excited to see him finally break out, because he was in Wet Hot American Summer, which is one of my all-time favorite movies. And then David Wayne and Michael Showalter, the guys who make that, they had these series of shorts called the Stella Shorts, these like just really crazy comedy like troops shorts. And Bradley Cooper would show up in some of those. And Zach Galifianakis was actually in one of them too. But I always loved Bradley Cooper from that stuff. And so to see him finally like kind of make good, and nowadays to be just this hugely respected filmmaker. You know, now he went on to make A Star Is Born, which, by the way, he should have won Best Actor for. Honestly, he could have won Best Director for it. But then also Maestro, which is also great. He's just on fire.
And he had done Wedding Crashers was pre-Hangover, was it not?
Yeah, but he was just a small role in that.
Yeah, he was the fiance in that, played such a dick in that movie. But he played it so well. It was such a good part. Ed Helms was another one too, who, as we mentioned, he was sort of just coming off of The Office at that point and a little bit of TV work, but really nothing big for him at that point. This was the movie that really launched him.
Yeah, absolutely. And Ed Helms has kind of had, of the main three, he's had the hardest time like kind of sustaining that career, although he's been in plenty of stuff over the years.
He did that Vacation remake sequel, whatever it was, that was just terrible.
It was really, really bad.
As a Vacation purist, I just couldn't on that movie.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then of course, Zach Galifianakis, who, as we mentioned, was doing stand-up at the time, and had a few projects on the go. But again, this was the movie that really launched him into, I guess, superstardom, but he almost kind of got, I would almost say, pigeonholed into playing the same character, the Alan character, over and over and over again.
Yeah, absolutely. That is his kind of lane. And he even did it to himself kind of with the Between Two Ferns series, which I would arguably say is the thing he's most known for outside of The Hangover. I mean, I feel like everybody shares those clips with each other. And, you know, back when they used to come out one every like few months or whatever, and it would be like the hottest thing for a week or two. And they were hilarious, you know, don't get me wrong. But yeah, I mean, he was basically continuing that whole thing of just being this bearded weirdo, you know.
Todd Phillips, of course, directing this movie. Again, it had a few hits prior to this, like you mentioned, Road Trip and Old School, Starsky and Hutch he did as well, if I'm not mistaken. Really, I mean, a quote unquote hit, I guess. I mean, that was sort of a whole trend of taking those 70s and 80s TV shows, turning them into movies, not being super serious about the movie as they were on the TV show. Wasn't a good trend.
It was a strange trend. Yeah. Like, I think that they just needed some you know, just some more ideas to pad out the lineup for the year. But some of them were, you know, somewhat successful though. And that won't, you know, I wouldn't call it a bad movie. It was fun. It just wasn't one of his best.
But of course, I mean, Todd Phillips went on to do some absolutely huge stuff as well. Most recently, of course, The Joker and The Joker sequel that's coming out, which, I mean, when you look at him going from something like The Hangover to something like The Joker.
Yeah.
I look at that, and every once in a while, when I see a Todd Phillips film, The Joker, I have to remind myself, oh yeah, that's the guy that directed The Hangover.
Yeah. Yeah. It's absolutely wild. And, I think personally that it's a great movie, Joker. And I know, you know, it's one of these love it or hate it things, but, yes, some of its references, you know, speaking of piecing it together and our, you know, talking about what movies inspired other movies, like its references to Scorsese and stuff like that are very, very obvious and on the nose, but I think they're done really well. And I'm very, like, I didn't want there to be a sequel to Joker, but I'm glad that he's kind of just trolling the entire movie industry with it. It seems like it's going to be quite possibly the most obnoxious movie ever made. And so maybe that will be an interesting way to do a sequel to Joker.
I watched The Joker and was, I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. I was shocked by, again, it was sort of that level of violence and what was in it.
Yeah.
I thought Joaquin Phoenix was really good. I mean, he played that character fantastically. He played it as good as Heath Ledger in that they're different Jokers. They're, you know, Jack Nicholson, Heath Ledger, Joaquin Phoenix, you know, they're the same character. All played them fantastic, but played them very, very different.
Yeah.
I really liked the fact that the Joker was as dark as it was. And I thought, oh, that's, we need an R-rated Batman movie to go with this Joker is what we need. And I mean, we really didn't get that with the Batman. It was right there, but just not far enough, in my opinion. Mm. But you're right. I think the sequel is going to be really, really interesting. And again, it's just one of those things where I look at it and go, oh yeah, this is the guy that directed The Hangover. This is the guy that directed Old School. And he's directing this super serious, dark Joker movie.
Yeah. I'm really curious, once he gets this out of his system, if he returns to goofy comedy or if he just feels too old for that, or like where Todd Phillips is like as a filmmaker at this point. It's really hard to figure out. I can't imagine there's another Joker movie on the way after that. I have to imagine he's going to do something else. But I wonder if it's going to continue in a more, you know, more serious tone, or if it's going to be, you know, back to, let's just, you know, make more men behaving badly movies.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Cultural impact of the movie. I mean, The Hangover really, it blew up when it came out. I mean, when you look at, and again, even 15 years from now, when you look at the memes that are out there and the quotes that are out there, I mean, it's still every Vegas Facebook group that I'm in, every Vegas X/Twitter person that I follow at some point has recently used a Hangover gif or a Hangover meme. I mean, it's the movie that I would say it's probably had one of the biggest impacts on culture, pop culture, in a very long time.
Yeah, I think so. And like you said, the memes, the gifs, they continue to be present. Like, and this is all these years later, and everybody keeps using them, the quotes, all this stuff. You just see it all the time. And it's funny because, you know, we were just talking earlier about how there were so many comedies in the 2000s, and yet this one is kind of the one that rose to the top. I mean, I would say Napoleon Dynamite's up there, maybe, you know, but there's not a lot that have as much of an impact on, you know, that kind of online culture that it's really very separated from. I mean, this is 2009. They didn't really have smartphones yet, like, as a, you know, they certainly aren't a big part of the plot in the movie or anything like that. So, you know, it's like, this is really early on any of that, but this does seem to have, you know, a grip on it.
But you're right. I mean, of looking back and going back, like, I can't think of another movie from that sort of era and that genre that is as quoted or as memed or as, like, I really can't think of another one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's crazy that how many things came from this movie, that things that we just say all the time, you know, little things that we kind of even throw twists on or whatever, like, but they stay in, you know, the culture even to this day.
Let's talk a little bit about the impact of this movie on Las Vegas. I mean, as a person from outside of Las Vegas, seeing Vegas presented on the big screen is always kind of fun and always kind of interesting. But this was a movie that really, I mean, it, I think it probably helped to bring people to Las Vegas. Vegas always had the, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas thing. And, you know, this sort of idea that that's where people go to behave badly. But I think that it really, I mean, again, it had a huge impact on the city.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of set the blueprint for a new era of what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. You know, it, like, just upped the ante by, you know, a whole bunch for that particular time. And we talked a little bit earlier about how, like, times have changed more now and, you know, what's allowed and what's, you know, okay. And, like, I'm old. We were talking, you know, about how old we're, more like Las Vegas at this point. I don't know what it's like out there nowadays, but I do imagine that for a while it was a lot like this and everybody was completely nuts in their evenings out in Vegas. Nowadays things are, it seems like they're a little bit more chill, which is interesting to see, but maybe they're not. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think, like, when I did the big guys trip that I did to Vegas, and I think that was like 2012 or 2013. And there was a group of like six of us. And I mean, we did have weird shit happen to us. We had one guy, one of the two guys ended up with somebody passed out in their room that was not from our group of people somehow. You know, he was in, just wandered into the room somehow and passed out and was there. We had a guy that had to be wheeled from the pool back to the room in a wheelchair because he was so drunk. And, like, you know, we lost somebody out for a while when we were out at a, doing our big crazy club night out kind of thing. So, I mean, that was there, but you're right. Like, now I've reached that point where, yeah, I'm definitely more of the Las Vegas crowd. And even talking to my, I call them the kids that I work with in my real job, when they go to Vegas, they're not going crazy and partying and stuff. And I know when it comes to, like, the bachelor and bachelorette party side of things, I think there's just too much drama now with people. I had friends, a female friend of mine that went to Vegas for a bachelorette party. And I mean, again, they lost someone for an entire night. The person that was supposed to be the maid of honor got so pissed off at the bride that she flew home a day early. And there was, like, they all flew down sitting together on the plane and they flew home sitting all separately. And, like, it was absolute drama. So again, I don't know how much of this same hangover tourism is going on in the city, if it's even still going on at all.
Yeah, but we all saw it. Like, it was absolutely a thing for quite a while. And I'm going to be talking to David Figler over on the CityCast Las Vegas, which will be kind of a third part of all this that we're doing. And so I'll be interested to hear what he thinks as far as, like, the current impact, if that is still alive and well. I mean, maybe it is. You know, we like to think that Vegas gets to keep its, you know, crazy status. And certainly Vegas keeps growing. You know, it's not like people have stopped coming. And, you know, these characters are all part of the whole party thing. And so, you know, I feel like every Friends group that comes out here, and at least on the plane, is saying that they're going to, you know, they're going to own Vegas, you know, when they touch down or whatever. Like, they've got their Zach Galifianakis, they've got their Bradley Cooper, they've got their Ed Helms. Like, that is the group. And so, you know, maybe then they just go to the buffet and see a Cirque show. But, you know, I don't know.
We did talk a little bit about that on the watch along, where I was saying, you know, there's the Bradley Cooper's line when they're driving in the car and he's talking about how, you know, I hate my life. I may never fucking go back. Yeah. I'm just going to move to Vegas. And again, like, having done guys trips to Vegas, there's absolutely that guy, mm-hmm. that is in the group that's like, yep, I hate my life. I hate my wife. I hate my kids. I'm just going to ditch them all and move to Vegas. There are all those, that guy is always a part of it. Culturally on Vegas too. I mean, I think there is still, obviously there's still a huge part of the hangover that is represented in Vegas. I mean, there are, if you walk down the Vegas Strip and you see the cosplay character busker guys, sure. There's at least five Zach Galifianakis guys,
yeah.
with a fake baby strapped to the front, wearing a t-shirt and beige pants or a gray t-shirt, beige pants with a satchel. Like, there's at least five of those guys with varying degrees of authenticity. And I was saying too, there is a guy who does that for a living. Like, he hosts hangover tours. He will take people out on a tour of the city and party with you. He'll go to your hotel room. He will take you out to strip clubs. He will do all of these things with you dressed as Alan from The Hangover. And I'm sure he probably books corporate gigs and probably makes very good money doing it, which again, 15 years later, and this guy is still doing this.
I can't decide if that's awesome or really weird, that renting himself out to be your weird friend. Like, that is crazy.
I feel it's a little from column A and a little from column B, yeah, quite honestly. Yeah. And I mean, how many times a day do you think the poor desk clerks at Caesar's Palace,
oh, God,
get hit with Alan's various lines about, is this hotel pager friendly? Caesar didn't really live here, did he? I mean, they must be, I mean, and I'm sure every person that does it thinks they're the first person that's ever done it,
too. Of course, yeah.
That's,
of course.
I mean, they've got to be just so done with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I would imagine so. It's got to happen constantly. Absolutely. And all the other places that, you know, the guys have to show up and they just have to be like the life of everything, as if they were the first people to ever do it. Like, which is exactly how this group, you know, portrays the trip to Vegas. So it's like, it fits right in.
When I was doing some sort of diving into the movie and just sort of looking at some of the background on the movie, came across a few little fun little Easter eggs and trivia bits about the movie that I thought were just kind of fun to share. Mm-hmm. Todd Phillips, director, does have a cameo in this movie, also right. A cameo in Hangover 3. When the guys are getting on the elevator to go up to the roof and the doors open and you see, well, first of all, you see him kneeled in front of her, mm-hmm. stand up, which I thought was such a gross out humor, such a brilliant role reversal in the typical elevator situation.
Sure.
He's the guy with the hooker in the movie. That's Todd Phillips, the director, which I thought was just so awesome.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think he was in either Old School or Road Trip, or maybe even both, but he loves to do a little silly cameo.
Ed Helms, of course, one of the bits in the movie, he's bet that he could pull out his own tooth. And of course he wins that bet. That missing tooth is not makeup. It's not special effects. There's nothing there. He was actually missing that tooth in real life. So they just pulled out his dental implant to give him the space in his tooth. I thought that was brilliant.
That's perfect. Yeah. Hey, who would have thought that would come in handy one day, right?
Well, it's kind of shades of Jim Carrey in Dumb and Dumber too, because Jim Carrey, his character in Dumb and Dumber, Lloyd's got the little chip in the front tooth.
Sure.
And I believe that's the same thing, where Jim Carrey actually has a chipped tooth and they just remove the cap for the part, which is kind of brilliant.
That's awesome. Love it.
And then the other thing that sort of was a weird one, it's the one mystery from the whole night that isn't ever really brought to resolution or solved. And that's the chicken. There's a chicken in the hotel room, and it pops up at a few different places. It pops up sort of right off the start when they first wake up, and the chicken is right there. And then Ed Helms is singing his tiger song, and the chicken is sitting right on the side of the piano as he's singing. And it shows up again sort of at another point in the room, but it's never really resolved 15 years later. And the mystery of the chicken is never really resolved in the movie.
Interesting. Yeah. I hadn't thought of it that way. But yeah, I guess you're right. I guess they don't ever kind of come back to that. Maybe it was food for the tiger, for Mike Tyson's tiger. I don't know.
That it's funny you say that, because that apparently was one of the things Todd Phillips brought up in one of the DVD commentaries after the release, because they did pose the question of the chicken to him, and he kind of said, well, maybe the guy stole it to feed to the tiger, which, you know, okay. I guess you can't roofie a chicken to feed to a tiger.
Yeah, absolutely.
The rewatch value of this movie. I mean, obviously it's 15 years later. We're talking about it. It's still culturally relevant in Las Vegas. It's still culturally relevant all over the world. Asking the question, it's almost a rhetorical question to ask, is does The Hangover stand the test of time?
Yeah, well, you've watched it like 800 times. So, I mean, we know the answer for you. But this was my first time seeing it since practically when it came out. I think I might have rewatched it before the second or the third one. But it held up so well. It is so funny. And I'm so glad I finally revisited it. I don't know why it's been so long, because it's hilarious.
It really does stand the test of time. And we kind of brought up during the rewatch as well that there really aren't any dated references in this movie. Like in other movies of that time, you might have seen some more, I don't know whether it was technology or whether it was just general overall whatever references within the universe of the movie. There really wasn't anything. It's kind of an evergreen movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we kind of touched on it earlier, but there's a few things that you wouldn't say nowadays in there, you know, maybe a few references in that regard that don't work as well nowadays, but you know, those kinds of things, they swing back and forth, and who knows, you know, people, what they'll think about those kinds of things later on down the line. But as far as specific cultural references, yeah, nothing that, you know, people wouldn't understand.
And even some of the I mean, seeing Mike Tyson popping up in The Hangover, I mean, at the time, it's not that he was washed up at the time in 2009, but he wasn't boxing in 2009, and he wasn't really on anybody's radar. And even, I mean, there were reports that, you know, he did the movie to basically pay for his cocaine habit at the time. Yeah. And even he admitted, he said, yeah, oh yeah, I was high as a kite. I was on coke when we were filming that movie. I don't remember hardly any of it. But I mean, he, you know, you look now 15 years later and he's back in the spotlight. He's, you know, potentially going to be going out and boxing and having a sanctioned fight and all of this kind of stuff. Again, like he's there and he's still culture. At the time he was in there almost as a non, you know, an irrelevant cultural icon.
It was super random, the choice to make it Mike Tyson. Like, you know, it could have been someone more, you know, relevant at the time, and it wasn't. And that just made it all the weirder. And yeah, this was definitely a part of him coming back into the spotlight.
And I mean, we touched on it a little bit too. There weren't really any, you know, ick parts in this movie, or real no-nos in this movie per se. There wasn't, again, some of the language that does pop up, you probably couldn't get away with now. Yeah. You would run into issues with trying to use it now. But otherwise, I mean, again, they're really looking at the movie and going back over it. There really isn't anything that really stands out as a big no-no.
Yeah. Bradley Cooper does say he drives better when he's drunk, but that's about it.
That's, yes, again, That's right. Phil was always our designated drunk driver. Yes, that's that's right. Now, as a person who spent a lot of time in Saskatchewan, Canada, and worked with a lot of people that grew up on farms in the prairies of Canada, I did hear that from a lot of people where they did talk about, you know, driving drunk. But again, that was the late 90s. Exactly. It was a long time ago. Yeah. That was a very, very long time ago. Yes. But yeah, I mean, again, overall, really no big icks in this movie.
Yeah.
None.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sequels, did you touch on those really briefly here? Was this a movie that even needed a sequel, no, let alone two?
Not at all. Not at all. And, you know, we were talking about a bunch of the comedies of this era, and most of them did not get sequels. I mean, there was a Hot Tub Time Machine too, but nobody really remembers that. But yeah, this did not need sequels. And I don't know. I know some people who do like the sequels. I remember each one just feeling more and more disappointing, and like, ugh, maybe that's part of why I haven't watched the movie in so long, is because I was so turned off by the sequels. But I don't know. I'm curious to rewatch them, you know, one of these days, and just kind of see if there's anything there that maybe, you know, expectations led to being disappointed at the time, and maybe I would actually like them more now. But yeah, this definitely did not need sequels.
Yeah, I think I've seen Hangover 2 once, and I've seen Hangover 3. I don't even think I've actually seen all of the Hangover 3. Yeah. I think I watched probably more of it than I should have and just went, this is not necessary at all.
Exactly.
By the time the third one came around, the characters had almost sort of become caricatures of themselves. They almost parodies of themselves. Like the brilliance of Ken Jeong's character in the original Hangover of Leslie Chow was so, because it was such a out of nowhere character, not a main character in the movie, came into the movie so late, you didn't know the backstory. By the time he rolls into two and then into three, and it's like it's a main character in the movie, I was kind of done with them at that point.
Yeah, that is the problem with comedy sequels, really, in general. We did a special Piecing It Together episode specifically on comedy sequels. And, you know, we talked about some of the ones that we love, but that's the reason why a lot of them just simply don't work, is they either become caricatures of themselves or they expand on bit characters that really didn't need to be expanded on. They were funny in that very specific configuration of being a side character in one or two scenes. You know, comedies are great. It's probably my favorite genre, really, when it comes down to it. But a lot of the times, once the story's told, that's, you know, we're good. Let's come up with something else.
This has been such a fun conversation to chat about The Hangover, and again, to revisit this movie that is such a you can call it a cultural icon. Mm-hmm. I would say, I mean, a comedy icon. It's big records with being an R-rated comedy, an R-rated movie, and such high box office. And still to this day, as I say, 15 years later, and we are talking about it here and how it's affected Vegas. I really do appreciate you coming on to have the conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks so much for bringing it up to me. And it was a really fun thing to do.
Piecing It Together is your podcast. It's a movie podcast with a twist. I love it. Tell me a little bit about the podcast and where people can get it.
Yeah, people can find Piecing It Together on all the podcast apps, and we're on social media at Piecing Pod. We also have a Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. But the concept of the show is to take a movie and use it as a jumping off point to discuss a bunch of films that maybe inspired that movie. And we call those films puzzle pieces. And those puzzle pieces make up the puzzle that is this featured movie that we are talking about. And I've been doing it for about 7 years now. And weekly episodes, sometimes twice a week, most of the time twice a week, because I watch too many movies and I want to talk about all of them. I also do live episodes now, which has been a monthly thing for the past 2 years. And I do them at movie theaters here in Las Vegas, mostly at Maya Cinemas and Downtown Cinemas. And if you're in Las Vegas, you should come out to some of the live shows.
Excellent. David, thank you so much again for jumping on. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And that wraps up another episode of Jeff Does Vegas. If you've got feedback on this episode of the show, or any other episode for that matter, or you've got suggestions and ideas for topics you'd like me to cover on the podcast, please feel free to reach out via social media on Facebook, X, or Instagram at Jeff Does Vegas. You can also email me directly at jeff@jeffdoesvegas.com. In the meantime, thanks for checking out the show. Be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts so you'll be notified the instant a new episode is released. While you're there, go ahead and rate us and write a review. And don't forget to visit jeffdoesvegas.com for past episodes, show notes, Vegas deals, and more. My name is Jeff, and this has been Jeff Does Vegas, a Walker New Media production.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.